Everybody, welcome to another edition of Double Crossed Radio, coming to you live from the Jefferson Republic. And we don't tell you where that is anymore, because if you don't know, you're not going to ever find it. But we're glad that you're here. At least you can listen to the ideas of freedom. My name is Chuck Horton. I'm joined tonight by my co-host Drew Lamb. Drew, how are you doing?
Really good, Chuck. How are you doing?
I've had a real busy week. For some reason I'm trying to complicate my life again. I don't know why I'm doing this. I guess I just can't stand having too much free time. I'm enjoying life. Things are doing real well. I've got a couple of sad things. I didn't plan to bring this up, but just thought I should mention that you've mentioned a couple of times where you've been losing friends to cancer, and I think I have somebody that's really seriously ill with cancer, and the medical model's not treating him well, but he still is going to the doctor and doing what they say, and I'm just kind of sad about that. I had a long talk with him last night, and it might be the last time I ever get to talk to him. He didn't sound very strong and full of hope and everything. His big goal in life was just to go. He's going to move to this house in Newport that has a view of Yaquina Bay, and just sit on the balcony and look at the view. And that's his ambition in life now, because he doesn't have the energy to do much more. And I tell you, I think these people they're really corrupt. And tonight's show was going to be about medicine. It was going to be a continuation. We kind of had Dr. Carpenter on last week briefly she got out of jail last Thursday, but some things happened, and they have a trial coming up, and there's just a lot of things that the owner of the network felt were not appropriate to be discussed prior to a trial, and didn't want to involve herself in any liability lawsuits, and we completely understand that. It's not her fight, really. Directly, although indirectly, I think it's all of our fight. But so that show is not going to be on. If you were tuning in to hear Dr. Carpenter, we are going to try and record a podcast this weekend and have Randy and Dr. Carpenter on a podcast that we'll post on the R Double Crossed YouTube channel. And that will be so you'll be able to hear all the inside baseball and everything that's going on there. And the plan is in that show we're going to try and put the FDA on trial. We're going to show and expose all the misdeeds and the crappy things the FDA tries to pull, and then they go after somebody who's actually saving lives, And she had one patient that died, and the patient didn't die because of anything she did. The patient died because he went back and started taking chemotherapy again, and they loaded him up with too much poison, and he died. And this is the same FDA that approved treatment, the chemotherapy as a treatment, when 99% of the people who take it in some cases of cancer die, and that's approved. But one of her patients out of 41 had a fatality, and so they're coming after her, and they took everything she had. They took all of her records, all of her computers, all of her money. She has no way to defend herself. It just, these are criminals. This is something that the mafia would do. So anyway, we're going to try interviewing this Saturday, and then we will get it up on our YouTube channel as soon as we get it edited out, so that all the Chuck mumblings and mistakes get edited out, so it sounds like I'm more professional than I really am. In the meantime, we have come up with a great show for tonight about financial matters, because there's a lot of things happening in the financial world. And I'm going to start off with just a statement to kind of get everybody's attention, get everybody kind of thinking about this. A couple of weeks ago, we posted something on our Facebook page. It was a YouTube from Mike Maloney, who's he's basically a precious metals guy. But he is a very good economic analyst. He gets a lot of raw data, and he kind of crunches those numbers, and he comes out with meaningful analysis of what those numbers mean in terms of how they're going to impact us, or the just normal average, Joe Sixpack guys out here in America. And one of the things that he was talking about in that video is that this is the first time in this country since the Great Depression that more businesses are closing than startups are being created. And just and this might be some good news for established corporations, because their competition is kind of withering on the vine, but it's really terrible news for everybody else. It means that the way of life that someone of my age, I'm 63, someone of my age grew up in, where you had a town that has maybe one or two hardware stores. They have some appliance stores. They're all loaned by people who live in the community. And these big box stores come in, have Costco's and Home Depot and whatever, and they do kind of guerrilla marketing. They make the profit margins so slim these other people can't sustain themselves. They don't have a big corporation behind them to keep them going while they weather that competitive drive or whatever. And Walmart's another one like this. Although Walmart tends to keep their prices low even afterwards. They don't want anybody coming back in either. But once they're gone, I noticed like Home Depot's prices came right back up. So they were only down while the competition was in there. And then as soon as the competition, a few of them rolled up their doors and closed their doors forever, I guess. Their prices kind of just eased right back up there where everybody else's were. So anyway, that's the loss. We're losing the choice. We're losing the service we get. We're losing that profit dollar stays in your community when you have a locally owned business. And so that's all of a loss. Every small community, I would say small, if you live in a town under 100,000, I consider that small. It's disappearing, and it's being replaced by the money goes out of the community and it goes to some corporate headquarters. And unless you have a town full of corporate headquarters, you're going to end up with a bunch of people working for wages, which is okay if they all have jobs, but you're certainly not going to have anybody at the top of the economic thing that's going to be helping to fund charitable projects and things that you build a community around. They're not. The people that are working for wages aren't going to have the kind of do-re-mi that it takes to do when I was in the Rotary Club, they were Forest Service wanted to close a ski resort on Mount Ashland, which is just south of Medford here where we are. And the Rotary Clubs of Southern Oregon, especially the one I belong to, which had quite a few deep pockets in it, came up with an amazing amount of money and bought the ski resort. And they are... And they gave it to as a donation. They bought it. They gave it to a nonprofit group to run, And they've had a couple of bleak winters lately because there hasn't been a lot of snow because of chemtrailing, in my opinion. But in the meantime, that ski recreation area is there because of those deep pockets. Well, as you drive all those small businesses out of town, it's pretty hard to get the corporate headquarters of Walmart to say, yeah, I'm going to kick in, I'll kick in 20,000, I'll kick in 50,000. So that aspect of our community is disappearing very rapidly. And I don't know how it is where you guys live, but, that's how it is here. So like I say, that's terrible news that these businesses are closing faster than new ones can start. And so that's the first thing I want to do to get everybody's attention. And we're going to talk about financial matters, matters of economics. Drew, you used to have a lot of businesses, correct?
I still do have several businesses, actually. Let's see. I own about four companies.
But you used to have more, and you used to always be thinking about starting. If you saw an opportunity, you'd just start another one, right?
I used to leverage myself through the use of employees, and I don't do that anymore. So now I look for opportunities, things that I could do differently without having to have all of the risk of having a staff. I don't operate businesses where I am creating jobs anymore. I think that's impossible in the USSA to do it profitably, unless you're some big, you know, mega corporation that controls this government. Otherwise, it's not something that you want to get into, you know.
I've
unwound that.
And I tell you, if you wanted to start a business in a country outside of the United States, it is much, much easier. Even if you're not a legal resident of that country, if you're just a tourist, you could still start a business and make frequent trips. You can't stay there longer than 90 days. This is the only deal.
Well, let's talk about regulation for a moment. I don't want to get into a lot of detail, so don't press me on that. But I will talk about a few things I've been working on lately, a few deals I've been working on lately, because one of my businesses is that I run commercial property, and so I am always dealing with business owners all of the time. Also, I should point out that I see about 80% of the businesses that I deal with fail over the period of about 3 years. And so I know how hard it is. And where we're at, the regulations don't make it any easier. And even if you're not a business, recently I just leased some space to a church, a small church that wanted to rent about 2,000 square feet for about, I think this is like an 8-person church right now. They had to pay a $2,500 fee to the city where the property is for a conditional use permit, and that was it. They just had to pay it so that the planning commissioners could get together and decide whether or not they were going to allow the church to rent a retail space to operate their church. But it wouldn't matter even if they were renting a church. It was already a church. They still would have had to gotten a conditional use permit. And now what's happened because of a major state and federal road project, every single business that uses this new road has to apply to the Planning Commission and to the state of Oregon to get permission to operate, to make sure that they're not going to exceed the budgeted amount of trips at peak rush hour. So they've made it virtually impossible just to wrap up deals. They've got their finger, their thumb on the whole thing, and they get to approve or disapprove at this point every single business. This is not good. This makes it very, very difficult and very expensive for businesses and property owners to operate. So this is something I've been spending a big chunk of my time on over the last few weeks, because we have to fix this. This can't be. And this is just, you know, one regulation right there. This is just one thing that a business owner could face just trying to get a location. You've got a lot of other things too. You know, there's all kinds of regulations. In Oregon, you've got administrative rules and revised statutes that constantly change. Every 2 years, they publish new ones. If you operate a business that requires a license, which almost every business requires some sort of a license, the regulations are an incredibly huge burden, and you know, and in some cases, you know, you have to get continuing education and pay extra fees for state approved continuing education, and then the fees associated with the renewal of your license, and then there's the costs, the time. Costs involved in compliance and proving to the state that you're in compliance, and these things just go on and on and on. And you know, I'm 45 now. I've owned businesses. I've been operating businesses since I was 14, and I've just seen it get more and more difficult, harder and harder to operate a business, and the rules and regulations just become more complex. They don't go away. Like, you know, like our conversation with Dennis Linthicum last week, Dennis was talking about how we need unlegislators, you know, elected officials, yes, who are going to repeal laws, do away with laws. And he was talking about how they ought to have all of the ORSs and administrative rules sunset every 2 years. It should be a clean slate, do over, but that's not the way that it is now. They just they get revised, but usually to make them more complicated and more expensive to comply with, and then they just add more onto it. It's getting ridiculous. I don't like doing business in the state of Oregon, and I'm sure that there's places where it's even worse, like California.
I don't doubt that, and I'm and there are places where it's better, and I think that's where the money's moving. You see that there's some states that are prospering right now and many others that aren't, and Oregon is one of the 10 worst places. Well, actually, it's not in the bottom 10. It's just outside the bottom 10. But
like Jeff Berwick pointed this out, how difficult it was to find opportunities in the USSA. You've got between government regulation and massive competition, there really isn't a lot of opportunity there now.
Yeah,
you know, there aren't that many entrepreneurs, but everybody that is an entrepreneur is going after the same thing, and it's difficult and expensive to innovate and to bring a new business model or a new product to the market, and then, you know, your only hope for protection is the, you know, the patent process or the trademark process, and we've covered that in depth, you know, with Stefan Kinsella, you know, and we've debated this.
That's right. We've had some outstanding shows, you know that?
Yeah, we really have. I'm amazed by some of the people that we've had on the show. But I have a friend right now who's what I'd call an aquapreneur, and He's an absolute genius when it comes to aquaponics system design, and I don't mean to shift the show to aquaponics. It doesn't matter. It could be anything. He's working on obtaining a patent, but it's really jamming him up just going through the process and paying the money and all that. And I've been telling him, listen, you need to just get this product to the market, because even if you have the patent, you're not going to have the resources to ever defend that patent. Your best weapon against competition is to continue to innovate.
And not only that, it's really important that it becomes known, your name becomes associated with that product. It's
right.
Like, you know, Coca-Cola is
but,
any.
But by the know, time whatever. by the time a competitor starts copying the product, if you're continuing to innovate, then you're going to move on. You will have, like, oh well, that was last year's model. We're on to the new model now, and mm-hmm. That's the key to keep innovating, to keep getting better, And that's how it's supposed to work, instead of just going, ah, I own this idea, and I'm going to sit here and squat on this. And this is my idea. Yeah. And it's not your idea forever. If you get a patent, it's going to expire in 20 years.
And even if they're not copying it, someone else will think of it the long line. It's not like, I know who you're talking about. I think the guy is really, really, really smart too. But there's other really, really, really smart people out there as well.
And absolutely. Yeah.
And they may be a very small percentage of the population, but it only takes a couple of them trying to think of the same thing to get to the same solution that you figured out. So your best offense, the best way to secure yourself or to make a name for yourself is get your product out in the market as fast as you can.
I agree 100%. You just got to get it out there. And don't get bogged down with that process. The whole patent process. I mean, it's a statist concept, and you're using the gun of government to defend your business idea, and that's immoral. And I don't think that should be the role. Well, government shouldn't have any role in our lives whatsoever. But that seems to be a role that some. Business owners think is acceptable, and if you're a small entrepreneur, it's just not a game that you can play. I mean, that's a game for the big guys, and then they use it to stifle competition, of course.
Yeah. Now, getting back to what we started on about this, there's businesses more closing than are starting up. It looks like our economy isn't doing very well, yet the stock market is hitting all-time highs. And I think I know what the answer for this is. I don't spend enough time in this to – and you guys would probably go to sleep if I started to quote all those kinds of things. But to look at the numbers and actually figure out if what I think is true really is true, because I know that I will know in a few months whether I'm right or not. So I just think, just what is holding this stock market up where it is? If all these businesses are closing, if that means that they're not making profits, who is making the profits? What is accounting for this, all this investment in the stock market? Well, one of the things that Mike Maloney pointed out was that the volume in trading has really dropped a lot. I would say it's maybe 20% of what it was in 2008. So that means that it doesn't take as much action in the market to make the price go where you want it to go. You can manipulate the prices easier than you could 6 years ago.
Yeah, in stock market terms, that's called painting the tape.
Yeah, and that's so that could be going on, and the money could be coming from QE, or it could be fake profits from derivative type things that caused a lot of problems in 2007, 2008. I don't know. I will find out soon. I'm not going to waste a lot of time on it because I have other things to do. But, and we'll come back to this in a little bit. I just wanted to point out some of these things that are happening economically, and then maybe we can tie them all together.
I would expect to see a decline in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500. And, I don't play the markets anymore. I'm assuming the NASDAQ is still around. So if the Fed really does stop with the quantitative easing, we will see money flow out of the stock market.
And I think that they stopped with the monthly payments, but they're going to start up the big lump sum deals again.
Mm-hmm.
They saw when they stopped that how it was starting to – the economy was starting to fall apart, and they realized they really can't stop. So I think they're going to still continue some form of quantitative easing until the whole economy just explodes.
Well, yeah, and we don't see the hyperinflation because the money just goes in the stock market. And now Japan has started up. So they started up with quantitative easing, and then the Nikkei hit an all-time high,
right,
coincidentally, because that's where the money goes.
Yeah. Now, the other thing, and this just happened yesterday. I was going to be talking about gold mainly when I got to this point, but yesterday this incident happened with the U.S. Mint, that is the government-owned mint, and they mint silver dollars and sell them for a profit. They ran out of silver dollars.
Right on. That's good news.
It's good news. So now, how could that happen? The price of silver is going down. It's down around $14, $15 an ounce now.
Yeah, it's
really a shock to me.
It's insane. It completely blows my mind. I can't believe it. I mean, it's trading. It's less than the cost to produce it.
The cost to mine it is actually at $17 an ounce. There were a lot of mines that were just. They really can't afford to shut down because it costs a lot of money to start back up. So they're just mining the stuff and stacking it in a warehouse and leaving it there because they'd rather have it as a physical asset than as a definite loss because they think the price won't stay down for long. Eventually, they're going to have to start selling some of it to make payroll and things like that. I don't know how well capitalized these companies are, but you know, when it gets to the point where you have to sell things at a loss to make payroll, you're probably not going to be in business much longer. And there'll be some more of those businesses that'll be closing down. And this is definitely this phenomena of having prices falling and having no product available anywhere is a symptom of a market that's being manipulated. Because that wouldn't happen in a free market. In a free market, if prices were falling, it would signify an oversupply of product.
Right.
So when you have, if you had an oversupply of product, the U.S. Mint wouldn't be running out of silver dollars. They were producing what they thought was enough, and they could go and get some more. But because the price dropped, people bought up everything they had, and it's hard for them to get more because no one will ship it to them at the spot prices. They say, well, you have to pay a premium. You have to pay up there more like $20 an ounce. So they're not going to buy it at $20 an ounce and sell it at $14 an ounce either. So they're just going to probably be out of silver eagles for a while until 2015, and then they'll make some kind of new price structure for it, and there'll just be a bigger premium on them. But something's going on in these markets. They're being manipulated. People are trying to – for too long, people were told that if this goes up or this goes down, it means this. Well, it doesn't always mean that. They're making it too simple of a case. Everything is always, you got to remember, everything is always a subjective value, and there's no aggregate demand and aggregate supply. It's all, everything is individual or individual company, individual producers. And when all prices are moving together, or a price moves against what you, is counter to what you know is an economic law, then it's clearly something's being manipulated. It isn't even hard to figure that out. So I thought that was really astonishing news. We posted a short YouTube on our Facebook page this morning, and I think that was also from Mike Maloney, if I remember right. And I thought that was just astounding. I first was alerted to this late last night by Eric Dubin, who's a frequent guest. He let me know this was going on. So this morning when I got up, I started looking into it. And that was the first thing I found. And Mike Maloney did a great job of explaining it. I'm pretty sure it was Mike Maloney. So here we have a situation where, you know, stock market's going to record highs. Everybody's saying there's no inflation. CPI is 1.7 or something. I don't think any of those numbers are reliable because all the markets are being manipulated, and this is evidence of it right here. It was a gift from God that this happened yesterday, so we could talk about it today. And other news on the financial and in the precious metals, we talked about this briefly before. Also, Switzerland on November 30th. Is going to have a vote on a referendum to increase the amount of gold that they have in reserve for their Swiss franc. Presently, they have 7% of the Swiss francs that are in circulation are backed by gold. Or I guess for every dollar, you got 7 cents of that dollar is you could get 7% of it in gold. Well, if the referendum passes, this reserve is going to be increased from 7% to 20%. And this is going to require that Switzerland would purchase 1,500 tons of gold. And I said tons, not ounces, tons. And this is about half of the annual production of gold in the world every year. To make matters a little more complicated, Presently, China is purchasing about 80% of the world's production. So when the 50% of the world's production meets 80% of the world's production, I get 130% of the world's production. So in order for production to increase to 130%, the price is going to have to go up to give the producers the right economic signals to begin producing more gold. I mean, they can. There's some mines that are more profitable to mine than others. And when the price goes down, the less profitable mines get shut down. So, as the price goes up, you're going to find people out in every creek in Southern Oregon panning for gold. That's just how it goes. Well, maybe not every creek, but, there'll be more activity in the mining circuit if gold is suddenly at $2,500 an ounce. And there's going to be a lot of people out there looking for gold. So anyway, that's coming up. Now, it's November 30th, and we also posted, this morning a YouTube video from Peter Schiff. He's making an emotional appeal to Switzerland to please, please, please pass this referendum. And it's not just because Peter Schiff sells gold. It's because he realizes that this is going to prove to the world how a monetary system should be done. And while it's not as much of a reserve as he would like to have them have, it's a move in the right direction. It should strengthen their currency, and it should be good for all of Switzerland. And it should show the world that this is how they should, this is something you should copy. And if that happens, if other nations start falling in line, then this could be a cascading effect, which would really increase demand for gold. And if we start having shortages of gold, then I guess if it's like silver, the price would just go closer to zero. It'll go the other way, of course. That's why the silver thing doesn't make any sense.
I just wonder how low it'll go.
They said right now they think it's going to go below 1,100 before it goes up, but I think they're going to have to hurry, because if this passes, I just can't see people selling into that kind of that information is just kind of a I don't know what they call a fundamental of the gold market, and you just it would be a fool's thing to sell against that.
Yeah,
1,500 tons of gold being purchased by Switzerland, that's a lot of gold.
Yeah, and I saw some people a few days ago having an argument in chat about the intrinsic value of gold, and somebody was saying that it had no intrinsic value. But if you dare tear your computer apart, you'll find gold pieces all through your computer. You can't produce a computer without gold.
I would remind that person that all value is not intrinsic, it's subjective.
True.
And so you don't arrive at the value of something through any intrinsic nature of that thing. You arrive at it at what someone else thinks it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what determines its value. And that's why Bitcoin has value, even though it's just a computer algorithm, is because people see worth and value in it. It has great utility, which means usefulness. And so that subjective value gives it worth in the minds of a lot of people, and that's what's created its value. This is something that was discovered by the Spanish scholastics, which we've got to talk about a little bit when we interviewed the president of the Universidad, Francisco Marroquin. Amazing man. By the way, I should be getting my giveaway books, the This Is Not a Zero-Sum Game, and that's just an outstanding book to read, by the way. But anyway, that's off the subject. Back to the subject. I just think that we're going to be in real interesting times if this passes this election. At the time, last time I checked, which was last week, the referendum was leading by 5% in the polls. That'd be a yes vote was leading by 5%. So that's looking good. That's better than being behind by 5%. And as we know, in elections, everything can change right at the last minute. In fact, that's all the election is a poll. It's at an instant. And everybody's opinion could be different the day before and the day after, but it's the day that the election takes place that matters. So that's the one that they make their decision based on. In doing a little bit of research on this, I did find an article that was kind of, I don't know where they find these people, but this is something, I guess, stock brokerage news release, and they were showing that the fears of a financial crisis are being eased, and that's the reason why the gold is dropping. Well, you know, I'm thinking that if there's more businesses closing than there are opening, then we're still in a financial crisis. If they say unemployment 6 point whatever it is, it's really above 20%, and it has been since late 2007. we're still in a real bad economic shape. And anyway, this is Jim Paulson. He's a chief economic investment strategist at Wells Capital Management. So I wouldn't invest any money with Wells Capital Management because this guy's head up his ass. And he says, that the drop in the price of gold is a measure of U.S. consumer confidence. It's reached its highest level in 7 years. If you're not scared anymore, you might be fine putting some money in the stock market. Oh, yeah. That's like a rigged game.
Yeah.
It's manipulated prices. As soon as they get it up where they want, they're just going to, you know, chop the house of cards will come tumbling down.
It's just program trading and fraud.
Yeah. So those guys look like they're working something there.
I would venture a guess that if society collapses and the stock market exchanges can find some way to power themselves, some sort of Matrix-like scenario. You know, it won't be like the Matrix, you know, where the robots are using humans to power their civilization. It'll just be to power the stock market, and there won't be any operating businesses or anything, but the stocks will still keep going up.
It could be. They'll just phony up a quarter of the report, and then the economic forecasters say, "Oh, the reports are coming in. They're looking really good." And even though we can't find a McDonald's restaurant anywhere in the world anymore, their stock rose 25%.
Sure,
the on earnings
will keep trading.
Yeah,
and the Bollinger Bands will keep showing trade opportunities for the software. It'll just keep going along.
Now, in these precious metals, traditionally for centuries, gold and silver maintained about a 16-to-1 ratio. In other words, 16 ounces of silver would purchase 1 ounce of gold. That was maintained for a long time. In fact, when our country was founded, we didn't have a mint. We didn't have any way to coin money. Some of the private banks could stamp out stuff, and they had some private individuals who would stamp out things, but there were no standardizations of it, and they thought that they needed one. So they adopted the Spanish, the Spanish 1 ounce silver coin, whatever it was called. I forgot all of a sudden. That's why I was supposed to write that down. Doubloon, whatever it was. I think the doubloon was gold. I think the silver one was gold.
Yeah, I don't know what the silver one was.
Anyway, they adopted that as one of the standards for a dollar. That was an ounce of silver was a dollar. And they used the Spanish silver coin as a dollar. And then in those days, a dollar went a lot further than a dollar goes today because that was real money. That was silver. If you had an ounce of silver and it's at its deflated price right now, it's absolutely manipulated price. It really should be closer to $100 an ounce. That ounce of silver, actually more than $100 an ounce probably, but that ounce of silver, you know, would buy in today's world about $100 worth of stuff. So people didn't often make purchases that grand, so they needed to use smaller denomination. So what they would do is they would cut it up into pieces, and they would quarter it, and then they'd split each quarter. So they'd have 8 pieces of a dollar would equal the dollar. And that's where the thing, when I was a kid growing up, the people would ask, they would oftentimes call a quarter 2 bits because it was 2 bits of a dollar. It was two, those pieces of 8 was it was parts of a dollar and all those expressions. And some of you that are younger have never heard those things. So you're probably saying, what is he talking about? And yes, what is he talking about? Well, 2 bits is a quarter. It's a quarter of a dollar. And that's where that expression came from. And if you had 16 ounces of silver, you could buy an ounce of gold with that, or equivalent trade, pretty much. And that exchange would vary slightly from year to year, month to month, just as it does today. But today, that ratio is 72 to 1. So it takes 72 ounces of silver to buy 1 ounce of gold. And that is totally out of whack.
Yeah.
I don't think gold is undervalued or overvalued.
No, definitely it's not overvalued.
So silver is, and Mike Maloney points this out, he thinks that silver could go up 10 times the amount that gold goes up when things turn around and start going the other direction. So he thinks, that he accumulates silver every month. That's what he does. Silver is awesome to accumulate every month, especially at these low depressed prices. They're putting it on sale for you.
And you don't need that much money to start accumulating.
Right now you can buy an ounce for less than $20.
You could buy mercury dimes.
Yeah, you can. You don't need money to do this. And you could start just program every time you get a paycheck, you just put aside a little bit and go buy some silver. And this is money you're not going to spend. Don't take money that's going to make it hard for you to pay the electric bill so they shut off your electricity or something like that. This is money that you would save or you want to put away. You're saving it for a retirement. This is money that's always going to have a certain purchasing power. It's going to get you through a period of time when you don't have earning power anymore, maybe when you're older. And it's a really good idea to do this. This is not financial advice. This is our opinion. You should do your own research and arrive at your own conclusions. But I think everybody should consider this. In this YouTube video, Mike also said that he thinks that there's a day that gold will be priced at twice the value of the Dow. So, in other words, right now the Dow is 17,000 something. So the gold, if it was twice the Dow, would be $34,000 an ounce. Well, I don't know if that's going to go that high, but maybe the Dow will drop to $5,000 and gold would be $10,000 an ounce. So I think that's plausible. It could happen. It almost happened in 2008.
I'd rather have gold than a lousy stock.
Yes, gold has had purchasing power forever. This isn't confirmed totally, but we think we're going to be able to have Simon Black on as a guest in the future. He confirmed that he wants to do it. We just have to get the logistics down, and if we can't, it won't be his fault. It'll be our fault. So, but anyway, he mentioned in an article that he wrote last week, I believe it was, that he was talking about how much Leonardo da Vinci got paid to, as a master painter, to be commissioned to do paintings. And he got paid at a certain rate, and it was in a gold coin. And so they figured out what it would be in today's dollars. And that is just about exactly what painters get commissioned to do paintings for today, really highly skilled ones. And so that purchasing power of gold has stayed relatively static compared to the purchasing power of let's say, fiat money, which is constantly draining away. It's going away. But people always tell me that before we went off into fiat currencies, you could, for an ounce of gold, you could buy a fine hand-tailored men's suit. The gold really should be more than $1,200 an ounce, but even at $1,200 an ounce of gold will still buy you a pretty fine, hand-tailored men's suit. And that purchasing power is still there. It's the reason you think that maybe it isn't is because so many things are made by machines today, and there's automated, there's advances in productivity, so the cost of goods that consumers buy has really gone down over time. And it's it kind of hides some of the debasement of the fiat currency because if it doesn't cost as much to make stuff, then the fact that your dollar is losing purchasing power doesn't show up so much because soap still costs a dollar. Well, if it was really like it should be, it should cost you about 3 or 4 cents now. But because it's you've lost all the purchasing power of that dollar, but because the productivity is so much greater, then it's still, you know, it's still right at a dollar. Well, that doesn't mean that the paper currency still has the same purchasing power. It means that the because with a dollar for the gold, you could buy like 90 times the amount of soap you could with that same paper dollar. So those are just some points I wanted to make about that. And I want you guys all to know that inflation is also another fake statistic. The basket of commodities that they use to determine what inflation is doesn't include food, doesn't include housing, doesn't include energy costs, which are three things that you have to survive. And those are necessities that everybody has to purchase. But they're not included in those statistics. And those three statistics have all been rising quite a bit faster than 1.7%, although housing for a time was going in the opposite direction, so it was a negative number for a while. And right now, oil is coming down, but I think that's going to be short-lived. I think it's an economic favor that the Saudis are paying the United States for bombing all these countries in the Middle East for them. Anyway, that's my opinion. I don't have any facts to back that up, by the way. Back on the track, the one thing you don't want to get wrapped up in too much is to think that inflation is defined by raising prices of commodities, because it isn't. Inflation is the debasement of currencies. It's when you increase the money supply, you decrease its purchasing power. Now, through manipulation and different kinds of operations that go on in a marketplace, that increase in prices may only be witnessed in one or two things. It could be only witnessed in, for instance, the stock market, which is could be a huge bubble being blown up by the inflation, the quantitative easing being put out there by the Federal Reserve. And I think that's probably the case. The money... it isn't driving up prices of consumer goods because there's an overproduction of consumer goods, and so there's a contraction or a deflation in those markets. So things like TV sets and it's also they have advances in productivity too, but you know, electronic goods, the iPhones, whatever, all that stuff is either getting more complicated or getting cheaper. But the prices really are going down in those areas. The things that, like clothing and things like this, there was an overproduction. So there's a lot of things on clearance. On you know, so it's not all going up in price. It's some of it's staying the same, some of it's going down, and so it makes it look like the prices are more stable than they really are. When resources quit being allocated to these places where they have overproduction, and their production starts to meet the market demand more closely, you're going to see a rise in those prices. It's going to happen. But right now, they're trying to liquidate still after 6 years. And it should have been done in less than a year. It should have all been done and gone. We should be recovered by now and off and running. But we're not, because of the government's trying to stick their finger in the pie and make it better, and it gets worse. And that's exactly what happened during America's Great Depression. This was in 1920, 21, they had a depression far worse than the Great Depression in 1920, started in 1929, the stock market crash. It was far worse. It was over in 18 months. And that was because they took the proper economic measures. These are things that they would never dream of doing today. They cut government spending by 50%. I'll say that again. They cut government spending by 50%. And this is Warren G. Harding. When I grew up, I was always told he was a bad person and all this stuff, but he actually had some economic credibility. He did the right thing, whether it was pure luck or a stroke of genius or somebody else told him to do it and he just was following their advice. I don't know, but it was the right thing to do, and I'm going to give him credit for it until someone tells me different. This cut in government spending, everybody say, well, what are we going to do with all those people that were working with the money that government was spending? Well, you know what? Without the cut in spending, meant a cut in taxes, meant there was more money circulating in the economy, and all those people got hired because that money was being invested in the economy. They were actually producing wealth instead of destroying it in a government job. It was It's how economies are supposed to work. And it wouldn't have crashed in the first place if they hadn't had inflation caused by the Federal Reserve, which had only been in existence for 8 years at that point in time. Well, if we could learn something from that and see what happened in the Great Depression, where they took – it wasn't quite as bad a depression at the beginning, but it was made worse through the government intervention and policy, and it actually ended up lasting 17 years. We didn't until this was the spring of – it was actually 17 and a half years, spring of 1947. And that was a long time. We're only 6 years into this one. We could go on another 11 years like this. Or we could crash tomorrow and it could just burn up. I don't know. We're in much worse shape in a lot of areas than we were then. In 1929, a lot of people still lived on farms and they could grow their own food. They had an abundance of food in a lot of areas. Tramps and hobos would come through and they would go up and knock on the kitchen door and they say, I could do some work for some food. And they'd go out and have them chop some wood or something, give them food to eat and send them on their way. They'd make a little mark on the door and they'd have a constant stream of people there, you know, getting fed to do little odd jobs around the place. And we kind of took care of a lot of people that otherwise nobody would have taken care of. And this was just spontaneous organization. It was kind of like how people in societies organize themselves spontaneously to get things accomplished. You produce something for me, I'll produce something for you. It was voluntary exchanges. Nobody held a gun at anybody's, you know, head and told them to fork over some money so I can buy some lunch for this guy. It was all done voluntarily. They also had a lot of mutual aid societies. A lot of them went broke during the Depression because it lasted so long. But those mutual aid societies where people would, they would have groups that would pay in dues every month, and they would be just basically like insurance. Some of them owned hospitals. I think the last one of these hospitals just recently closed down. It was in Alabama. They, it was like a couple hundred dollars a year, they would take care of you medically no matter what happened to you. And they had a really large subscription base, but with all the health care going, the government wanted control of everything. They kind of put them out of business through regulations. Oh, big surprise there, huh? Anyway, they had lots of things like that going on during the first Great Depression, 1929 to 1947, that aren't in existence now. And those were kind of safety valves that kind of helped things out. They were things that put less pressure on the government to provide stuff, because the government was horrible providing anything. Everything they did made things worse. In fact, they even confiscated everybody's gold at $20 an ounce, and then overnight said it was worth $35 an ounce. Basically stole the value of that gold from those people. So they gave them back, the money they gave them back for their gold was suddenly devalued by 80%. It's just robbery. That was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, thief. I should have been impeached for that. Just a crook. So, but in those days, people were a lot more patriotic than they are today. They had a greater sense of nationalism, I guess you would call it. And so they were able to get away with crap like that. I don't think they would get away with it today. They'd probably have to shoot a bunch of people to get their gold. And they probably will if they have to, if they want it bad enough. So I guess what we're telling you is, don't tell anybody where you hide your stash. Don't make it public knowledge. Just make it a secret between you and maybe a couple of family members. And just keep it to yourselves, because I think that that's a possibility they could come after the gold again. And after they did that, I think it was 1932 that they did that, 32 or 33. No, it was in 33, because it was first year of Franklin administration. After they did that, we did not get the freedom to own gold again until the 1970s. That was pretty horrible.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So this stuff, they know that silver and gold, they can make these short-term manipulations. They can try and fool you into thinking something isn't what it seems. It's a magician's trick. It's not reality. If the price was really that low, it would mean there was an oversupply and there would be gold coins, gold ounces, silver ounces everywhere. The U.S. Mint would not run out because the demand would be taken up in other areas and they would have plenty of, I mean, it wouldn't happen. So this is all something that's being managed, and it's kind of spooky in a way. I'm glad that we started this radio show a while back, because I've been in doing the research and doing this radio show. When things like this happen, now I understand them so much better. This has been really, really kind of fun to watch these things unfold. It's kind of exciting to say, wow, they did that? That happened? Whoa. Because these are things that have never happened before. It's a new trick. But because it's going to fail, it won't be repeated as a trick. So, because people will be wise to it next time. So I've been talking for too long here, Drew. I'll let you finish off with stuff about gold and silver.
Well, I think that that people should definitely be considering making some purchases right now. Most people that I talk to about this type of thing don't have very much money. So I would say, you know, look at buying some junk silver. Go down to the coin shop, you know, and they'll have, you know, old Mercury dimes, 1964 and older, that have silver in them, and you could buy those in whatever quantity, you know. Probably right now, I would imagine you could get a silver dime for under $2. Would be my guess right now.
Yeah, I think so. I if you don't know where to go and you're in Southern Oregon. The people that I buy my gold and silver from are Bill and Lisa Arnold on out in Eagle Point. There's a little mini mall out there that it's on Highway 62, and they have a sign that says gold and silver. It's pretty hard to miss. But they're very knowledgeable. And for those of you who may have, maybe you want to get something for your wife for Christmas or something, they have scrap silver that has maybe turquoise in it or some other gemstones, you know, semi-precious gemstones that they thought were too nice to just to scrap for silver, so they sell them. And so you could get some of that jewelry, and you could actually enjoy the silver that you're buying as jewelry while you keep it as a precious metal at the same time.
Chuck, that was spoken like someone who had been a jewelry salesman.
Yes. some things you just can't get rid of. They're just ingrained in yourself, you know? It's my former life, everybody. So,
yeah, don't let my wife hear you, or I'm going to have to make a trip down to the jewelry store. And
you'd be happy with how much it costs. It's really expensive. Asha picked up a really nice turquoise silver ring for this. It's hardly anything. It was to buy it new, it would have cost 5 or 6 times that much. So it still looks very nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I should pick up some Mr. T chains or something.
Mr. T chains anymore. The gold is scarce. But they do have quite a bit of silver.
Yeah.
But and they don't have any of the big silver chains. I think those get kind of dirty looking after a while. They're hard to.
There's a guy in Ashland that has a coin shop. I always forget the name of the place. It's behind an art gallery, right downtown, and kind of a cranky old guy. But you know, he's got a selection of goods in there, and has some curiosities too. It's a neat shop. If you guys are in Ashland, definitely check it out.
Yeah. So anyway, don't miss out on this opportunity. The silver is on sale. Has a huge upside potential.
We are not paid commission on this. We're not investment.
No, we don't. We don't get any money for that. We're just trying to help you guys out. Okay, we'll see you next week. The music's starting. And thanks for listening, everybody.